My name is Maureen O'Hagan, and we were hired by the developer of 50 to 52 Prospect Street in Springfield. This is a unique program. It is through what's called the Neighborhood Stabilization Program, which is a state program that provides funds in distressed neighborhoods to build new or renovate existing homes and to sell them to affordable home buyers. So this program, this project is through the Neighborhood Stabilization Program. And what it is, they have built a brand new duplex, so two units. Each unit is two bedrooms, 1.5 baths, and 928 square feet. You are buying both units for $225,000 total. One of the units must be owner-occupied, and you can rent the other units. The maximum rent for the unit is $1,700. The rent is based on a household earning up to 80% of the median income, same as you'd need to in order to purchase. But you can use that rent to help pay your mortgage. So the guesstimated mortgage is about $2,000 a month. So if you subtract the $1,700, if you get $1,700 for rent, the money out of your pocket for your mortgage is going to be $300. So it's a really sweet deal for first-time home buyers to get into the housing market and certainly build equity. So it's a great deal for you. A refrigerator, stove, oven, microwave, central air conditioning, and a washer and dryer hookups are included. Driveway parking, gas heat, and there is city water and sewer. Your tenant would be responsible for all utilities except water and sewer. That would be the owner's responsibility, along with the insurance on the full property. That is the homeowner's responsibility as well. So tonight, we're going to talk about the eligibility criteria, the lottery, how you can apply, the documents you need to provide in order to apply, and I am here to answer any questions you have, okay? If you have a question that you do not want to be recorded, this meeting will be recorded. It will be posted on our website this week. So if you want to listen to it again, you can. And for people who are unable to participate in tonight's meeting, we'll have the same opportunity to hear the details about the project. But if you have a question and you do not want it to be recorded, you need to let me know. And then I will pause the recording, answer your question, and turn the recording back on. Now, there is a chat. Hang on. I just opened it. So if you have a question, would you like me to answer, and you don't want to answer, question in front of everybody, I will periodically take a break and answer all the questions in the chat, okay? So let's get started. Tonight, I've told you about the property. The price is $225,000. The unit will be distributed by lottery, and it will go to households who require two bedrooms over households that require one. So we're going to go over all the details. The most important, not the most, but very important, that you need to understand is when you submit your application, you need to submit it with a mortgage pre-approval and all the required financial documentation. If you submit an incomplete application, we will notify you after the application deadline that your application is incomplete. In that notification, we will list the documents that you did not provide and should have. But most importantly, which is why it's very important to submit a complete application, you will not be included in the lottery if you submit an incomplete application. So I am going to spend most of this meeting. The last section is going to be regarding the documents you need to provide. And I will go over in that. I will go over the documents in great detail. So when this meeting is over, I want each and every one of you to understand what needs to be provided. We are always available in the office if you have additional questions. All right. And regarding the mortgage pre-approval, FHA, Rocket Mortgage, Quicken Loans are not accepted. So if you send in a pre-approval with an FHA loan, that's as far as I'm going to look at your application. You will not be included in the lottery. The reason why is FHA will not close on properties where there is a deed restriction. And this property does have a deed restriction, which I will get into in a little bit. And Rocket and Quicken Loans, they don't close on affordable properties at all. So just make sure you are not submitting an application with an FHA loan. And I'm going to go over into some loan programs that are available that I would really recommend you look at, because I think they're a great deal for first-time home buyers. But I will get to that as well. So tonight is a public information meeting. Here to answer all your questions, so just let me know. February 11th is the deadline, so you need to email or fax it into our office on or before February 11th. If you're going to mail your application, it needs to be postmarked on or before February 11th. We will accept, if it's postmarked on or before February 11th, we will accept your application through February 25th. So that gives you 2 weeks for it to get here. If you have postmarked February 11th and we receive it after February 25th, you will not be included in the lottery. We recommend, and this is really from the post office, that you send your, if you're mailing it, you send it priority or overnight so you have a tracking number and you can track it to make sure it's where it's supposed to go. Because we are getting paperwork that has been in the mail in transit. The longest it's been is 6 weeks. So the U.S. Postal Service is not that reliable these days, in my opinion. So please make sure you send it, if you're mailing it, to attach a tracking number. And the lottery will take place Friday, March 7th. It will also be conducted via Zoom at 3 o'clock. Again, this meeting will be posted on our website this week, hopefully tomorrow. All right, so let's get to the nitty-gritty. There are three main eligibility criteria to participate in the lottery. One is based on income. Income is based on the number of people who will be living in the home. So if you are a husband and wife and a kid, your household income is based on a three-person household. If you're a single parent and a child, it's a two-person household. And the income limits are for a single person, $61,350. For two people, $70,100. Three people, $78,850. And a four-person household is $87,600. Now, we require income from all household members 18 years of age or older. If, for example, you're a married couple and you have a child, the mortgage is going to be in your name, which is absolutely fine. Household eligibility is based on everybody in the household earning over the age of 18. So if your wife is working, her income and assets count. If you have a child who's over 18, their income and assets may count. So just keep in mind, you need to provide the information for all household members 18 years of age or older. Income is from all sources, pay stubs, self-employment, child support, alimony, Social Security, retirement, whatever your source of income is, that is what we're going to count. You need to be a first-time home buyer. A first-time home buyer is defined as a household who has not owned a home for a period of 3 years, and that includes homes that are in a trust. There are exceptions to the first-time home buyer rule. One is if you're a displaced, I'm going to read it directly. If you're a displaced homemaker, which is an adult who has not worked full-time, full year in the labor force for a number of years, but has during those years worked primarily without pay to care for the home and family. And while a homemaker, you owned a home with his or her partner or resided in a home owned by the partner. That's the first exception. Second is a single parent, where the individual owned a home with his or her partner or resided in a home owned by the partner and is a single parent. You're unmarried or legally separated from a spouse and you have either one or more children, where you have custody or joint custody. This would also include if you were pregnant. The unborn child is considered part of your household member. A household where at least one household member is 55 years of age or older, you do not need to be a first-time home buyer. Households that owned a principal residence not permanently affixed to a permanent foundation in accordance with applicable regulations, that's typically, my understanding, is a mobile home. And then the last one, households that owned a property that was not in compliance with state, local, or model building codes and cannot be brought into compliance for less than the cost of a new permanent structure. So any one of those, you would have an exception to the first-time homebuyer rule. If any one of those, you currently own a home, you still own the home, it has to be sold before you can purchase or close on the affordable home. If you do own a home that has to be sold, you will have a defined time frame to get that home under a purchase and sale agreement. And if you don't meet that deadline, then we'll move on to the next buyer. This home is finished, so the builder is going to want to close as soon as possible on the property. And if it's going to take you 3 months to sell your home, they're not going to wait that long. All right, so I'm just telling you that up front. Okay, and your assets, your total asset limit is $75,000. That would include your current, you know, checking, savings, stocks, bonds, money market, CDs, any assets divested at less than full market value within the last 2 years will count as full market value in determining your assets. Where we may not count the full value is if you have a retirement account. For example, a 401k, 403b, you may or may not have access to those funds while you are still employed for the company. For example, if you work for the city of Springfield, more than likely you have zero access to the money in your retirement account. If that is in fact the case, we are not going to count the value of that account towards the $75,000 asset limit. If you have worked for another ABC company, you have a 401k, if you're allowed to take an in-service withdrawal, which is where you can withdraw funds and not pay it back, the total value of those funds that you can withdraw will count towards the asset limit. From the money you can withdraw, we will deduct federal tax, state tax, and if you're underage to withdraw without penalties, it's usually a 10% penalty. We will deduct that from the full value you can withdraw without paying back. That would be counted towards your asset limit. If you're only able to take a loan out against your 401k and not an in-service withdrawal, and loan, obviously, you need to pay it back, then we're not going to count that 401k at all, all right? So every individual, every account could be different. If you add up your total value of your assets and it is over $75,000 and it does count a retirement account, then you can get a statement, or it's part of your 401k handbook that tells you the circumstances you can withdraw those funds. So you would need to provide that documentation with your application, and we will review it. And, you know, if you can't withdraw, then we're not going to count the value of that 401k. And that is a 401k for a company you are currently working for. If you have a 401k or a 403b from a past employer and it is still active with that employer, that money is going to be counted towards the $75,000 asset limit. But we will deduct, again, federal tax, state tax, and a 10% penalty if that is applicable, and deduct it from the total value, and what is remaining will count towards the $75,000 asset limit. If you have an IRA, same thing, we're going to deduct taxes and penalties. That will be added to your assets. A Roth IRA, if it's more than 5 years old, you can withdraw money from that without any penalty, so we are going to count that at face value, all right? So don't be discouraged if you add up all your assets and it's over $75,000 with a 401k, because that may make the difference of you being eligible or ineligible, okay? So don't, and I'm going to say this, please don't disqualify yourself based on that. Let us do it, because we're the ones that have to figure it out. I don't want you to figure it out incorrectly. So sometimes, and this has happened, people have disqualified themselves, but at the end of the day, they would still have been eligible. So let us do the disqualification, and hopefully we won't have to. You'll be eligible. All right. Any questions on how your assets are determined? No? Okay. All right. Now, one duplex must – someone have a question? Hello? Nobody?
No, not for now.
Not for now. Okay. Again, one of the duplex units must be owner-occupied. It cannot be rented or leased. The second duplex can be rented. If you don't want to rent it and you want to let a family member live in it, you can do that too. That's up to you. But you do have the opportunity to rent that unit. Non-household members cannot be co-signers on the loan. So only someone who is living in the owner-occupied unit can be on the mortgage. Okay? So you can't have parents co-sign for you if they're not going to live in the unit. Again, pre-approval letter is required. There is a $4,000 down payment assistance program through the city of Springfield that you may qualify for. That's something you would apply for if you have the opportunity to purchase. But I'm just letting you know that that money is there if you want to look at it. Okay, now for the mortgage. Now, you got to listen to me very carefully on this, all right? Your mortgage must be a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. No adjustable loans, no FHA loans, okay? It must be a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. It must have a current fair market interest rate. The current interest rate is 6.93. It changes every week, and that is where I go to on a website that I get the interest rate. Every bank has a different interest rate, but that's giving you a sense of where the interest rate will be. If you're using points, you can pay no more than two percentage points above the current mass housing rate. So you're buying down the rate. You must provide a down payment of 3%. If you will be using a down payment program or you're receiving gift money from a family member to assist with your down payment, then you must have 1.5% of your own funds. And what that means is when I review your application for eligibility and you're not using a down payment assistance program and not receiving any gifts for down payment, I expect to see the 3% in your account. If I don't see 3% in your current value of your account, you're not going to be included in the lottery, okay? And same if it's 1.5%. If you're getting a down payment assistance program, you still, or a gift from people, you still need to have 1.5% of your own funds. And if I don't see that in the account, you will not be included in the lottery. Okay. Okay. Your monthly housing costs, it's not here, and I don't know why, so I apologize for that. Your monthly housing costs typically can't be more than 38% of your monthly income. All right. And again, non-household members are not permitted to be co-signers on the mortgage. Now, there are two programs out there geared specifically for first-time home buyers. One is through Mass Housing. They currently have down payment assistance up to $30,000 to assist you with the purchase of the home. My understanding, and I am not a mortgage expert, so you want to find out the ins and outs of the program, you can go to masshousing.com, I think it is, and find out about it. But my understanding is they would give you $30,000 or whatever the dollar value is, no more than $30,000, and you would pay that back when you sold the property, okay? So it's essentially free money until you choose to sell. The other program is the One Mortgage program that's geared specifically for first-time home buyers. That is where it's a minimum 3% down payment. You need a minimum credit score of 660. You do not pay private and mortgage insurance, so if you're putting less than 20% down on the property, you always have to pay private mortgage. You don't pay private mortgage insurance on a One Mortgage program, and you pay typically a below-market interest rate, all right? The One Mortgage program is available through approved lenders only, and not every lender is approved to lend on the One Mortgage program. The Mass Housing program, a lot of lenders are approved for that. For the One Mortgage program, you can go on MHP.net and you can find the list of approved lenders. Or if you go to our website, which is mcohousingservices.com, we have under the finance tab, we have four lenders. Each one of them is MHP, the One Mortgage program approved, and they also lend on the Mass Housing program. All right. You don't need to use those lenders. You can go to any lender you want, but those definitely have both MHP and the Mass Housing program, okay? And then, of course, there is the $4,000 down payment assistance you can get through the city as well if you qualify. All right. All home buyers will need to complete a first-time home buyer program. Well, there's only one home buyer. I will send you, whoever the initial buyer is, I will send you the list of approved programs, you just need to take the class from one of them. The class needs to be taken before you can close on the property. So you don't need to take it now. You can take it before you close. All right. I have added more mortgage specifics, just so that everyone's absolutely clear on everything. So your mortgage pre-approval must cover the $225,000 purchase price. The reason why I say this is because people send me a purchase price of $150,000, bad answer because it's more than $75,000, and they say, well, I'll make up the difference. I don't care. I want to see a purchase price of at least $225,000 in that pre-approval letter. It can be for more, but if it's for less than $225,000, you're not going to be included in the lottery. Your mortgage pre-approval, again, must be a fixed-rate mortgage. Adjustable rate mortgage will not be accepted, and you're automatically disqualified from the lottery with an adjustable rate mortgage. At minimum, your pre-approval must show the purchase price and the financing amount. If it does not, you won't be included in the lottery. And the reason for that is the purchase price is $225,000. The financing amount, say, is $200,000. So we expect to see the $25,000. That's your down payment. Now, your pre-approval, if you're using a down payment assistance program, it should be listed in your pre-approval that you're using the Mass Housing Down Payment Assistance. All right? If it's not, I expect to see that $25,000 of your own funds in your account when I review your application. So that is why your pre-approval must have the purchase price and the financing amount. If that's all it is, and it must say a fixed rate mortgage, if that's all it is, if that's all that's there, I'm good. All right? If you're going to use a down payment, then that needs to be listed in the pre-approval as well. Your mortgage pre-approval usually will have an expiration date of 60 days or so. If your pre-approval does not have an expiration date in it, if it's older than 60 days when we receive it, it's expired and we will not accept it. If you submit it and it expires sometime before the application deadline and we received it when it was still active, you're good. You will need to provide an updated one if you have the opportunity to purchase. But we will accept it if it expires after we get it. If it has an expiration date on it, then we are going to use the expiration date that is stated on the pre-approval. So if it's 60 days, 90 days, that's fine if the pre-approval has an expiration date. We will use the date on the letter. Okay, down payment assistance, again, must be stated on the pre-approval. Otherwise, it will not be taken under consideration. We will determine your down payment based on your pre-approval. I've already explained that. If you're financing $200,000, your down payment is $225,000. Your down payment is $25,000. If you're not using a down payment assistance program, we expect to see that $25,000 in your account when we review it. And again, if you're using a down payment assistance program, then we're only going to look for a 1.5% for the down payment in your own funds. If you're providing all of your own down payment, then we will expect to see 3% down payment, okay? And remember, you are responsible for down payment and closing costs. And the closing costs can run, I think they're telling me like 6% of the purchase price. I'm not sure. But the closing cost is a good faith estimate will be provided by your lender if you have the opportunity to purchase. So once you submit an actual mortgage application, your lender will provide you with an estimate of the closing costs, but not till that point. If you are receiving a gift from a family member, they need to provide a letter telling us the dollar amount that they will be providing you, they will be gifting you. That money does not need to be in your account when we review your application for eligibility. We understand they're giving you a gift if you have the opportunity to purchase. So a lot of times they're not going to give it to you unless you actually have the opportunity to purchase. So we don't expect to see it in your account, but the letter to your mother or father or whomever is providing that gift money for you needs to provide the gift amount. If they give a range, we're going to take the highest number, all right? So it's better off just to be exact on how much they're going to provide you. Again, no FHA, Rocket Mortgage, or Quicken Loans. You will not be included in the lottery. Online mortgage pre-approvals won't be accepted, meaning you just went on a website and entered your assets and entered your income. That's not going to be accepted because you can enter whatever you want for your income and whatever you want for your assets. So it really isn't worth the paper it's printed on, as far as I'm concerned. Jorge, you have a question?
No.
Okay. So I would recommend, if you're first-time home buyers, you really want to go in and meet with a lender, or call them on the phone and scan and email documents back and forth. This is an education opportunity for you, and you're not going to get the knowledge you need just logging in online. I mean, going online and using a mortgage calculator is fine to get a sense of what, how much of a mortgage you can provide. But there's a lot of things that the mortgage people do. I have no clue. I'm not a mortgage lender. But it definitely will work to your advantage to actually walk into the lender or pick up the phone and call them and send them your documentation. And then finally, we will not accept any pre-approvals where any information has been crossed out, whited out, and submitted with the application. None, we won't accept that at all. All right, any questions on the mortgages?
No, you've been more than clear.
Okay. All right, so this is a, there's one unit, so everyone is treated equally, meaning there's no local preference, so no one that lives in Springfield will have a preference for the unit. Everyone is treated equally. This is a two-bedroom unit. So it's going to go to households that require two bedrooms over households that require one. And we base that on there's at least one occupant per household per bedroom, and a husband and wife or those in a similar living arrangement must share a room, and that there's one person per bedroom thereafter. An unborn child is considered a household member. You need to provide proof of pregnancy with your application, but that unborn child is a household member. If you are in the process of a divorce or separation, we need that documentation. You need to be far enough along in the process that we know what your, how your household assets are being split. If you're getting child support, how much that is. If you're getting alimony, how much that is. If you're not far enough along, it may be too early to apply for an affordable unit, okay? But you do need to provide that documentation with your application. And if you require reasonable accommodation, you need to request that at the time you submit your application and the necessary documentation that goes along with it. If you don't provide it with the application, that it will not be taken into consideration when the lottery is drawn. All right, there are no handicap accessible units in this property at all. Okay. All right, the deed restriction. And I'm going to read this. Deed restriction is a little different from others that I'm used to dealing with. So it's called a Declaration of Affordability Covenants with Use, Refinance, and Resale Restriction and Purchase Option Deed Writer. It's a mouthful. Is used to ensure the unit is affordable for future buyers. And what is nice about this deed writer, it's only good for 15 years. So if you own this unit for 16 years, the deed writer, or 15 years in 1 month, the deed writer no longer applies. So if you were to sell the unit, within 15 years, it would be sold to a homeowner who meets the same eligibility criteria as you did at the time you purchased, okay? So it's going to be first-time home buyer, income limits, which will have changed, an asset limit, okay? But if you sell your home and you're limited when you sell it within 15 years, you're going to be limited on the resale price, okay? Because it still needs to be priced affordable for the new buyer. However, if you wait until after 15 years, the deed writer has expired. So you own that home like any other homeowner with no restrictions on equity. You can sell it to whomever you want. You can pass it on to your family members. There's no restrictions on the ownership of that property. All right? The deed writer is signed at closing. So you will get a copy of that with the purchase and sale agreement. So you need to review it and make sure you understand it. But this really is a sweet deal. You know, if you qualify and if you get everything in. All right, any question on household size, deed restrictions, anything like that? Okay. I asked you how much money do I need to make to afford the unit. That really is between you and your lender. You know, we're unable to give a minimum income requirement because we don't know what your down payment will be. If you have a large down payment, that's going to lower your monthly costs. So it's really between you and your lender what the minimum income will be for you to purchase. So everyone submitted their application. We review every application prior to the lottery. If you have been determined ineligible, you will receive an email from us letting us know why you were determined ineligible. If you are ineligible, if you've sent in a complete application and we reviewed your application for eligibility and you were determined ineligible for income or assets or whatever, you would have an opportunity to appeal that decision. If you are not included in the lottery because you submitted an incomplete application, which means we don't have all the required financial documentation to determine your program eligibility, you are not going to be included in the lottery and you do not have an opportunity to appeal, all right? If you have been determined eligible, you submitted a complete application, you have been determined eligible to be included in the lottery, you will receive a lottery code, which my name's Maureen O'Hagan, so my code would be, say, MOH. It's going to be a combination of the letters in your name. That is what is announced during the lottery, is the initials. We do not announce people's names to protect your privacy. Everyone who applied will go into a hat, essentially, and we will draw the numbers 1 through 10, however many people apply. The first person on that list that requires 2 bedrooms will have the first opportunity to purchase, meaning someone who's a single person is drawn first. They need a 1-bedroom household. We're going to move to the first household on the list that requires 2 bedrooms, all right? So we're going to offer in the ranking order, we'll offer everyone who requires 2 bedrooms first, meaning if people decline the unit, and then if we've gone through all the 2-bedroom units, we go back to the top of the list and we start offering it to 1-bedroom households in their ranking order. So we will pull all tickets during the lottery. After the lottery, usually the same day, I will email you the list as drawn. And then I will also have a second attachment to that email, which will be the order in which people have the opportunity to purchase. All right? So if you're a 2-bedroom household and your name is drawn first, then you know you're going to have the first opportunity to purchase. But that may not be the case. So we will send out the list, and the list will be these are the 2-bedroom households. This is the order they're going to purchase. And then the 1-bedroom households will follow that. Okay? We are... Like I said, this duplex is done. It will be ready for occupancy, so we're going to do our best to move forward very quickly after the lottery. We've already reviewed your application for eligibility, so we will send your information off for final approval. Mass Housing is the monitoring agent here. They have final say in your eligibility. That's typically just a formality. If we think you're eligible, typically you will be. Because we will have addressed, any questions we have with Mass Housing prior to you receiving your approval. So once you get Mass Housing approval, we'll make arrangements for you to view the unit to make sure you want to buy it, and then you'll go directly to purchase and sale agreement. Okay, so once you're at purchase and sale agreement, once your purchase and sale agreement is fully executed, meaning it's signed off by you and the seller, then you're looking at a 30 to 45 day window to close. All right, so I would say when all is said and done, if all goes smoothly, you would be closing within 60 days of the lottery, okay? Again, it's done. All right, so any questions on anything we've just talked? Someone asked, should a one-person family not apply? I would say apply. I don't know what our final numbers will be. I don't know how many people will apply. And I don't know how many people that do apply will have complete applications. So we could have 5 applications, 4 of them are incomplete, and you're the only one who submitted a complete application, you're going to get the unit. Okay, so I definitely would encourage you to apply. You got nothing to lose. All right, so to give you a sense, the price is $225,000. If you're following along with the application, I'm on page 8. We price it at a 7.03 interest rate. The interest rate is slightly lower now, which is a good thing. And we priced it with a total monthly housing expense of $1,979. That is the maximum that we need to use. There's a formula. But that doesn't mean that's what your monthly housing cost will be. It could be less. So, for example, if you're able to rent that unit for $1,700 a month and your total monthly housing cost is $1,979, your total check you're going to write for your mortgage is $300. Pretty good deal. Keeping in mind you're paying for your full homeowner's insurance on the total property, not just your unit. All right, so now I'm going to go into what you need to provide with your application. I'm going to go in what you need to provide, how we use it so you understand why you're providing it. So ask me any questions. I want to make sure when this meeting is over you are 100% comfortable with what you need to provide with your application. All right, page 11, really simple. It's where you provide us your personal information, name, address, cell phone, email, if you own a home, if you require special accommodation, your household, who's going to be living in the household, we need to know their name, their relationship to you, and their age, where you and other household members are working, and what your monthly income is from all sources. It's a guesstimate. You're going to fill this out, but you need to provide all the backup documentation, so I never take what's on this application as golden. Page 12 is your household assets, so what your current balance is and your checking and savings and stocks, bonds, money market, all that. If you're getting a down payment gift, you want to provide that here, keeping in mind all these numbers you're providing us, you need to provide the backup documentation for both income and assets. Jasmine, you are terrific. Wayfinders is one of the first-time home buyer workshops that are approved. There's a total of three that I have that I can send out at any point. There's about your family, which is your for affirmative marketing that we need to keep track of. It's purely optional. You don't have to fill it out if you don't want to. I will say this is education for you. There is no local preference in this lottery, so everyone is treated equally. If there was a local preference, okay, and you met one of these, you were Black, African American, Asian, Hispanic, Latino, or any one of those, and there was a local pool, you were not local, but you were considered a minority based on how we have to keep track of it. A certain percentage of a local pool needs to be minority. If those numbers aren't met, then we are going to pull non-local minorities from the open pool into the local pool. And the benefit of that is you now have two opportunities for a unit instead of one if you were just in the local open pool. So it doesn't apply here. But in other lotteries, if you were to apply for them with a local pool and you are a minority, it could work to your advantage to fill it out. Again, purely optional, you don't have to, but it could work to your advantage to do so. So then you need everyone over 18 needs to sign and date the application. Page 13 and 14 is the affidavit and disclosure form. You need to read, sign, and date that. Page 15, I'm going to go over this one, is application tips. I put this page together because about 70% of people who apply for lotteries submit an incomplete application. It's incredibly frustrating. So I took the time and put together a list of where people make the main mistakes. So I'm going to go over this, and hopefully you'll remember it when you put your paperwork together. So pages 16, 17, and 18 is the list of the required income verification documentation. On some of those, there are notes that I put underneath. You want to pay attention to the notes. It could be the difference between a complete and incomplete application, as well as eligible and ineligible for a unit. Okay? Pay attention to those notes. All financial documentation, income, assets, and tax returns are required from all household adults age 18 or older. There are no exceptions to that. Okay, so don't tell me my kid goes to college in New York. If they're on your application and they're over 18, we need their tax returns, we need their income if they have any, and we need their bank statements. All assets must include your name, account number, and institution name. Do not bring up a statement on your phone take a copy of it and send it to me, because more than likely it's missing one or all of those things and it will not be counted. You need to actually go in and print out the actual statements and send them to us. If you send it without your name, account number, or the institution name, it's an incomplete application, all right? Do not assume, never assume, that you don't need to provide a certain document. When in question, call or email before you submit your application, or just submit all the paperwork. If we don't need it, we'll shred it, okay? I'd rather have more information than we need than you forget something, and we will go through it and we will shred the information we don't need. Some people appear to think that the gross amount on your W-2 is the dollar amount that goes into your, that is the value of your 401k or 403b or whatever it may be. It is not. All that is tells us is how much you deposited into that account in that past year, not what the total value of the account is. So you need to provide the last statement, the latest statement of those accounts. If you have Robinhood, Acorn, Wellbeing, or Wellborn, there's all so many kinds of accounts I can't keep track of anymore, online accounts, you need to provide the statement. Even people have said, well, I have no money in it. Well, how am I supposed to know that? I see it in the paperwork you provide us. You could have $500,000 in it. So you got to provide the statement, even if it has a zero balance. If it's an open statement, provide it. All we need is the last statement. We don't need, unlike checking account and savings accounts, where we need the last three. We don't need those for the asset statements, just the latest statement. If you are unable to provide specific information, submit a note with your application explaining the circumstances. I can guarantee your application will be accepted, but depending on the circumstances, we may be able to work with you. For an example, a woman started a new job, and she did not provide a copy of her retirement account, but her pay stub shows she has a retirement account. And that is because she hadn't been there long enough to be able to get a statement. I didn't know that. So because I didn't know that, because she didn't tell me, she wasn't included in the lottery, okay? So we try to be as fair as we can, but if we don't know the problems you're having, we can't hopefully assist you. Again, no guarantees, but we will do our best. Do not take photos with your cell phone of any documentation and email it to us. 9 times out of 10, those photos are not legible, and we will not accept them. They're wonky, they're crooked, they're folded, they're blurry, they're not, and we're not going to strain our eyes trying to figure out what they say. So you need to scan and email a PDF of all your files, unless you're going to mail everything to us. You certainly can fax your documentation. You're more than welcome to. However, if we, for whatever reason, we don't get all the pages, your application would be incomplete. A lot of times people will go to Staples or Office Max or whatever the company is called now, and inevitably not every page goes through. So you may not want to fax, but we will accept it if you do. All right, so now we're getting to the nitty-gritty. Mortgage pre-approval, I've discussed. FHA, Rocket Mortgage, Quicken Loans are not accepted. I would suggest you take page 5 and 6 with you to your lender to make sure they have all the information on what needs to be included on that mortgage pre-approval. If you require a special accommodation, you need to provide proof of that or documentation, and which usually includes a letter from your doctor. All right, here we go. If you are working, whether part-time, full-time, you need to provide your last 5 pay stubs, okay? And it's 5 pay stubs, whether you are paid weekly, biweekly, semi-monthly, or monthly. You need to provide the last 5. Don't provide 3 and tell me it covers 6 weeks. That's not what we ask for. We ask for the last 5 pay stubs. Now, we project your income forward 12 months based on the pay stubs we receive. We determine your income 2 ways. First, we look at your gross pay per pay period. We will average it over those 5 pay periods and then multiply by the number of pay periods in the year. So it's either going to be 12, 24, 26, or 52. That's one way. Excuse me. We're also going to look at your gross year to date. And we're going to divide that by the number of weeks in the year, which we have a website. We get the breakout the number of weeks in the year for us. And then we're going to multiply by 52. Whichever is greater is the amount we're going to use towards your income. We will look at what you earned in 2024 now. We will look at those. I don't know if you'll have your W-2, or we ask you to submit if you received it, but we will look at your 2024 gross pay stub to see what the dollar amount was. And if there's a significant difference between 2024 and what we project your income to be, we will ask you for an explanation, but that we're not requiring that as part of the application, so we will call you when we're reviewing your application on that. So with your pay stubs, in addition to determining your income, we also will know if you have a retirement account, because that's going to be listed on your pay stub. It'll be Roth IRA, 401k, 403b. So we make note of that, a mental note, that we need to look for your retirement plan in your stack of paperwork you'll submit to us. We also, most everybody has direct deposit these days, so we will look at the banks that your pay stubs are being deposited into, direct deposit, if you have direct deposit. And we will start looking when we get to your asset, your bank statements and stuff. We will look and match up those account numbers with the statements you provided us. I'm mentioning this because sometimes people, I don't know, have a Christmas club, a vacation club, an emergency fund that they dump 20, 50 bucks in every month and they don't even think about it. Okay. We will, because we're going to look at your pay stub and know that you have an account ending 1234. And we're going to go through the bank accounts you provided us, and there is no 1234. It's an immediate incomplete application, okay? So take a look at your pay stub. Make sure you're providing us all your bank statements when you submit your paperwork to us. All right, if you receive unemployment, disability, compensation, workers' compensation, severance pay, you have documentation for each one of those, you need to provide us with the documentation, meaning if you're on unemployment, we need the letter that states what your benefits are. That letter will also tell us when your benefits end. And then you also need to provide a copy of the payment history so we can see how much you've actually earned for every week and how many weeks you've had it. Disability, workers' comp, severance, there's a letter that tells you how much you're getting. That's telling you when the money's ending, if it is ending. So we need that documentation to determine what that income is from those sources. Now, I forgot to mention, for all of those, it's gross income, all right? So we're not looking at your net. We're looking at your gross income in determining eligibility. Now, if you have obtained a new job in the last 12 months, you need to provide a copy of the employment offer letter. If you are no longer working for a company you worked for last year, then you need to provide a copy of the separation letter from your employer. And that letter needs to state that you're no longer working there and your last day of employment. Okay? All right. Any questions on the pay stub? Okay. Benefit letter. If you receive Social Security, annuities, retirement funds, insurance, disability, death benefits, or any other type of periodic receipt, which is typically money on a monthly basis, you need to provide us the documentation. So if you're getting Social Security, you need to provide us with a copy of your current Social Security benefit letter. If you're getting retirement, there's a letter somewhere that says how much your retirement is. Disability, anything you're getting monthly, periodic receipts, there's a letter that states the dollar amount you're getting. Now, you could say, hang on, you could say to me, but Maureen, you see that money being deposited into my checking account, which is true. I'll know if you're getting Social Security. I'll know if you're getting unemployment. I'll know if you're getting retirement money from a pension. But what I don't know is if that's your gross or net, okay? Your income is based on gross. So seeing those deposits in your bank statement, all it's telling me is, excuse me, I need to see the corresponding documentation. I am not going to take the amount that is listed in your bank statement as what the value of that dollar amount is, because it could be net. So taxes have already been taken out. Your eligibility is based on gross, which is why you need to provide the original letters. Now, if you've been on retirement, those letters could be several years old, and the dollar amount of your retirement hasn't changed at all. I get that, but we still need that letter, okay? Again, if you have issues with getting any of this, call us. Let us know. If we can work with you, we will. We don't like disqualifying people, but I'll do it. All right, child support alimony. If you are receiving child support, you need to provide either the divorce papers that state the amount you're supposed to get, the court order amount you're supposed to get, or if you have the DOR statement, or if you have not married to the parent and you have an informal agreement between the two of you how much they will pay you per month for child support, you need to get a letter from them telling us the amount. If you don't receive child support, there is a form, I think. Did I include it? Hang on. Nope, I didn't include it. Same on me. Anyways, if you're not receiving child support, you need to provide a letter stating you are not receiving child support. It'd be a simple letter. All you need to do is write not receiving child support, and it's that simple, okay? We don't need any fancy letter, but you need to provide that documentation. Now, same with alimony. That's usually dictated by your divorce papers, unless you've been to court to have it amended. So you need to provide us with those divorce papers for your alimony. If you are self-employed, you need to provide a detailed income and expense statement from the last 12 months. And it's broken out. You can get a spreadsheet. If you want a sample spreadsheet, I'm more than happy to send you one. But every month, January through December, what your income is every month, what your business expenses are every month, and then it provides the net income every month. So we will look at that. When you're self-employed, we do look at the net income because you have business expenses you can legally deduct before you come down to the amount of money you're paying taxes on, right? So you need to provide that documentation if you're self-employed. Self-employment, if you drive Uber, Lyft, you do self-contracting work, it can be any number of things to self-employment. So you need to provide that documentation. All right, federal income tax returns. We need the last 3 years. More than likely, you will have not completed your 2024 taxes yet. If you have, that's great. Otherwise, we need your 2021, 2022, and 2023 tax returns. Federal only, you don't need to provide your state returns. If you have submitted your 2024, if it's done, then you need to provide your 2022, 23, and 24, okay? Now, you need to submit all pages you submitted to the IRS. I just was reviewing for a lottery this week, and someone submitted the first two pages of their 1040. But I could tell from their tax return that there were additional pages that were submitted to the IRS, okay? So on your tax return, we know if you're getting Social Security. We know if you're getting capital gains, interest income, retirement accounts, mutual funds. It's all there. So we know we're going to be looking for those statements from just looking at your latest tax return, okay? So we do pay attention to that stuff, so please do so yourself. But anyways, you need to submit every page that was submitted to the IRS. If you did not submit a tax return for any one of those years, then you need to provide a verification letter from the IRS telling us, it's a one-page letter that says, Maureen O'Hagan did not submit taxes in 2022. That's it. Really simple. But it's a form letter from the IRS. You can get that one of two ways. The long, hard way is printing out Form 4506-T from the IRS website, and then you need to fill that out and mail it into the IRS, and they will mail you the requested forms. Or the simplest way, you can go to irs.gov. You can set up an account, create an account, username, password, and then you'll be able to print out the verification of non-filing letter for the year or years that is required, okay? Again, you don't need to print one out from 2024 because the tax deadline is not until April 15th. So we're talking about 2021, 22, and 23 only. And then if you're unable to locate your taxes in any one of those tax years, then you can request a tax transcript, again, using Form 4506-T, or, again, logging into the IRS website, create an account, and you'll be able to print out a tax transcript of your tax return. You can also request a tax return. They will charge you money for that. So you don't need to provide a copy that you have to pay for from the IRS. They will provide a copy of your tax transcript at no charge to you, and that is perfectly acceptable for us, okay? Now, you also need to provide the corresponding W-2s for 2021 to 22, 23, and absolutely 2024, because you should have all your W-2s by January 31st. Again, if you're unable to locate any of your W-2s or 1099s, you can log in to the IRS.gov or fill out Form 4506-T, and you can request a wage transcript for one or any of those tax years, and you can print out your transcript of your wages. And it will include your W-2s, and it will include your 1099s. Okay, so you have that option. So there's no reason why you don't provide everything that we requested regarding your tax returns. All right, asset statements. Now, this is where people screw up, so pay attention. We need your last 3 months of checking account statements and savings account statements. We need every page of those statements. Okay, don't just send me the cover page that tells me what the balance is. Because we look through with a fine-tooth comb your deposits, all right? So what you need to remember is, again, I'm going to repeat, all asset statement must include your name, account number, and institution name for any checking, savings, investments, retirement accounts. With your checking accounts and your savings accounts, do not go in and run a 3 month transaction list. We want the actual individual bank statements. If you don't have your statements mailed to you, you can, you can go online to your bank and you can print out your e-statements. Those will look exactly like the statements they would mail you at home. Okay? So you need to print out the last 3 months. Now, we look at those statements, the deposits particularly, with a fine-tooth comb. We are going to match up your pay stubs. So if you get direct deposit, ABC company, payroll, check, Social Security, check, and we're going to know you should have set your Social Security benefit statement to match up that Social Security. If you get Fidelity, again, we're going to look every month. If you're coming in every month, you need to provide the statement, the letter that shows us what that dollar amount is every month, because we don't know if it's gross or net. If you're transferring funds between accounts, so say you have checking account ending 1234, and you're getting deposits in your checking account from account ending 5678, we expect to see 5678 as part of your asset statement, all right? So if 5678 is not your account, then you need to explain that. And you need to explain whose account that is, all right? If you have deposits, ATM deposits, mobile deposits, Venmo deposits, Cash App deposits, you need to explain every one of those deposits and where that money came from. If you do not, we're going to average it out, the money we don't know where it came from. And you don't tell me, well, you know, it's Venmo. I said, I don't, because people get payroll on Venmo these days. People can get paid on their Cash App these days. So we need to know, we're going to need those, I'll talk about the Venmo and Cash App statements in a minute, but so we need to know where that money came from. If you don't tell us, we're going to average all those unidentified deposits over the course of 3 months, and we're going to average them out, and then we're going to multiply by 12, and that dollar amount is going to be added to your income. And that is where people get put over income, and that's where they're determined ineligible. So we need to know where every source of income is coming from. People have second jobs that don't have direct deposit, and they go into they're not like $100. It's like $69.71 through every month. Clearly, we're going to think that there's another job there. So unless you can tell us where that money's coming from, we are going to count it as income, and that can certainly put you over the income limit. All right? So I'm begging you, please pay attention to the deposits going into your checking and savings accounts. All right? We do look at them with a fine-tooth comb. Now, as far as how you spend your money, not so much. I will glance through that very quickly. I don't care how you spend your money, but I'm looking down there for transfers into other accounts. So if you're transferring into a Robinhood account, well, you have a Robinhood account. We expect to see the statement with the rest of your asset statements. Or you're putting money into Fidelity, or you're putting money into, I don't know, Coin, Cash App, or whatever you call that, Bitcoin. So those are the kind of accounts we're looking for when we do a quick run through on your transaction list. We're looking to see where you're transferring money out to other accounts or other asset statements. So just know that we need to see those statements as part of the packet that you submit to us. Now, if you have Venmo, eBay, Poshmark, PayPal, Cash App, ATM, mobile, you need to identify those. I've already said that. But you also need to provide your last three statements of Venmo accounts, Cash App accounts, and then you can explain right on those statements where the money's coming from. And it could very well be, I understand those accounts are used to share lunches and dinners with friends. I get that. But really, they're being used for a lot of different things these days. So you need to identify those deposits. And if you identify them, it's really simple. That's it. You identify where they came from, and we're going to take your word for it, unless it's pretty obvious that something else is going on. So again, remember, do not provide a running transaction list of any activity in any statements. We want the actual bank statements. Now, I've talked about the checking account. Okay, prepaid debit card statements. This is not your ATM card that's linked to your bank account. This is a Visa card. This is, I don't know, whatever. People are getting paid. If you get Social Security, you may have Social Security on Direct Express. That's a debit card. So you need to provide us with your last statement of that debit card because, A, we get that debit card because we check to make sure that's the only money going on it, which if it's Direct Express, it is. But if it's a regular Visa debit card, money can come from multiple sources. And also the balance of that account is added to your asset limit. So we look at it for that. So you need to provide the last statement of those debit cards. All right. Any questions on checking, savings, accounts? God, you're a good group. Okay. If you have a revocable trust, you need to provide a copy of that trust statement. If you have investment accounts, stocks, bonds, treasury bills, CDs, mutual funds, money market, Robinhood, or any other online accounts, we need just the last statement. We don't need the last three. We just need the last statement. Same with IRAs, Roth IRAs, 401k, 403b, Kehoe, pension, retirement funds, from current and past employment. You need to just provide the latest statement. We don't need the last 3 months. One thing I want to mention here, you are providing your W-2s from 2021, 22, 23, and hopefully 2024 if you've received it. We can tell based on your W-2s if you have a retirement account from any of those companies, okay? So we're going to look, and if there is a retirement account and you didn't provide us a copy or didn't provide us a copy of the rollover IRA, which is where most accounts go into, that you've moved it out of ABC company into a rollover IRA, then you need to provide us with the last statement from that company because the value of that account, less taxes and penalties, will be added to the asset statement. And again, the asset limit is $75,000. All right. If you have a whole life or universal life insurance policy, this is not the policy you may have at your company. This is a policy that you take out privately and pay or may pay monthly on. Though if it's a whole life or universal life, that policy has a cash value, and that cash value is counted as part of your asset limit. So whole life or universal life. If you have a term life insurance, there is no cash value to that, so you do not need to provide a statement. If you have any personal property held as an investment, no idea what that is. In all the years I've been in this business, which is a lot, no one's ever had personal property held as an investment. I'm assuming it's like antique cars, whatever. That is counted as an asset. Lump sum receipts or one-time receipts, those are counted as assets, not income. For example, you won $1,000 in gambling, that's an asset, not income. One-time receipts, you got a big fat check from somebody for past car insurance accidents or Social Security, they were behind and they sent you a lump sum payment, whatever it may be, one-time payments. That's an asset. That's not counted as income. All right, students. If you have household members 18 or older and they are a student, college student usually, if they are a full-time college student and they are a dependent on your tax return and they are working, full-time, dependent, working, we are only going to count $480 of their income towards your income limit. If they are a full-time or a part-time student and they are not a dependent on your tax return, we are going to count their income at full value. We're not reducing it to $480. It's full value. You need to provide proof that your child is a student. If they're still in high school, 18 or older, still in high school, we just need a letter from the high school that's stating they are a student and when they're graduating. And if they are in college, you need to provide student status on that. I've already mentioned an unborn child is considered a household member. You need to provide a letter from your doctor that confirms that you are pregnant and when the child is due. I've already discussed if you're in the process of a divorce or separation, you need to provide the documentation. Your divorce has to be far enough along where we know how the assets are being split, how much child support you're receiving, if there's a home to sell, the value of the home that you'll get. So we need to know that. If you're far too early in that process, you can still apply. However, your spouse's income and assets and first-time home buyer status will count, even if they will not be living with you, okay? So you still can apply, but they need to provide all that documentation as well. And again, we've talked about down payment gifts. If someone is providing you a gift, they need to provide a letter. They need to provide just the front page of their statement. They can black out, they can redact their account number, and that just tells us what the value of the account is. We don't need any of the pages you're going to provide us for your account. But we just need confirmation that they actually have that money and that they will be gifting you. It cannot be a loan. It must be a gift. So make sure that you gift in the letter. It does not need to be paid back. If you have a deposit and it is currently sitting in your home in cash, you need to deposit that money in your bank account. We're not going to take your word for it that you have cash in the home for the down payment. So you need to deposit that in a bank account. And then finally, if you do have a home to sell and you meet one of the exceptions to the first-time home buyer rule, then you need to provide a market analysis for the home so we have a guesstimate of what it's going to be sold for. You need to provide a copy of your last mortgage statement if you still have a mortgage on it. And what we will do based on that information, we'll guesstimate what your equity is going to be from the sale of the home, and that is added to your assets, okay? I think that's it. And then just to go over what you need to return is a copy of the signed and completed signed and dated application, the signed and dated affidavit and disclosure form, signed and dated application tip sheet, complete signed and dated required personal information and income verification documents form, all the required financial documentation that is applicable to you and your household, a mortgage pre-approval letter, and a special accommodation letter if it's applicable. And that needs to be postmarked if you're mailing it on or before February 11th. If you're emailing it, it needs to be in our office at 11:59 p.m. on February 11th. If it comes in at 12:01, that's now February 12th, so it's late. All right? Any questions? No questions. Okay, so I am going to post this on our website, hopefully tomorrow, but definitely by the end of the week. If you want to re-listen to it, you can. If you have any questions, feel free to call me. Our number is on the last page of the application. And I would love to work with all of you. I think this is a terrific opportunity that doesn't happen very often. And the lucky winner is going to be has done themselves a really good job. So call me if you have questions. Email me if you have questions. I'm more than happy to help you with anything.